Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Tuesday morning. It's June 9th, 2026. Great to be with you on a Tuesday and every day here at EWTN's Catholic Connection. Hope your day is going beautifully. And as usual, the team back at the ranch in Irondale has put together a fabulous, if I must say, fabulous rundown, as we say in the business. So first up, out of the gate after the weather and the news, as we always bring you every day, we are going to hear about the experience of one of the many people who joined or is joining along the beautiful National Eucharistic Congress pilgrimage that is moving through parts of our country, leading up, of course, to our country's wonderful 250th anniversary. I'm so excited about this. This is such a beautiful, beautiful event and so timely in terms of the Holy Father this past weekend in Spain with the massive Eucharistic procession that brought out literally millions of people. And of course, his encouragement to make sure that we are still being very active with these types of events in terms of bringing Jesus to the street. So we'll talk with Mary Carmen out of the gate at about 16 minutes past the hour. And then have we got a summer getaway for you? Let me tell you. Very exciting, and we are going to be talking with the president of the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island in northern Michigan. Our topic is not only the 2026 Grand Hotel Getaway, which is filling up and featuring the amazing Bishop Barron, but the Grand Hotel has won yet another major recognition in terms of being one of the most, if not the most, popular and family-friendly places in all of the country, not to mention Mackinac is at the top as well. So we'll discuss with David. And then I'm very excited to have Stephen Osbeck with us. It's been a little while, but he has a beautiful mini series on EWTN. And Peter Gagnon mentioned this last Friday in our Inside Words segment, a wonderful mini series on visions of the divine in Eucharistic art. And this is, of course, very similar to his book. But I love this type of a series because it just brings us to these places that express our Savior, body, blood, soul, and divinity in art. So looking forward to talking with Stephen for the rest of the 9 o'clock hour Eastern time. 2 cents, there's a new study out talking about the well-being of children since COVID. We'll have a story about that in our news, and then I'll share a little bit more in 2 cents. And then, of course, speaking of news, it's Newman Guide News with Kelly Solomon from the Cardinal Newman Society. And some of the headlines out there regarding what's been happening at some commencement events, oh, you might be surprised. But then again, maybe not. So we'll discuss with Kelly. Weather-wise, the National Weather Service is saying numerous severe storms with the potential for severe wind gusts, tornadoes, some potentially very strong and very large hail expected in parts of the central and northern plains. Heavy rainfall may bring a flooding threat to parts of the northern plains and from the Ohio Valley to the southeast. Fire weather concerns are persisting in the Four Corners region and hot and humid weather expected in the central part of the country. That's a look at the forecast on a Tuesday morning and our rundown for the show. As we say, it's already 3 minutes past the hour and we need to get started on a Tuesday with the news here on EWTN. So let's do just that. The Holy Father had a meeting on Monday with victims of abuse by members of the clergy in Spain, according to a statement released from Matteo Bruni, the director of the Holy See Press Office. In the message, Bruni noting that the Holy Father met with 6 abuse victims who were accompanied by church personnel engaged in supporting and accompanying the victims. During the conversation, Bruni said, which lasted nearly an hour, the Holy See Press Officer noted that each of those present, drawing on their own painful personal experiences, offered the Pope a number of proposals aimed at making the Church's response to such tragic cases more effective. And on the third day of his apostolic journey yesterday to Spain, Devin Watkins reports, the Pope reminded the country's bishops that the Church's true wealth lies in the holiness of her children.
Meeting with the bishops of Spain in Madrid on Monday, Pope Leo XIV encouraged their faith and commitment despite the many challenges facing the Church. He recalled that Christ leads the Church and determines her rhythm, saying pastors are called to walk as members of His one body. Pope Leo noted that ours is a time marked by polarization and division. He said the Church in Spain is called to offer a witness to unity in diversity, embracing the richness of gifts, charisms, and sensibilities present among the people of God.
Con la fortaleza de conservar como un tesoro,
the strength of the church, he said, does not come from the greatness of her resources, but from the holiness of her children, from the communion of her pastors, and from the humble and persevering fidelity of those who allow themselves to be guided by the Spirit. The Pope told the bishops that their ministry is to be a visible sign of communion with Christ, with the Pope, and with all elements of the Church in Spain.
Estamos llamados a ser principio visible de comunión.
Your mission, he said, calls you to safeguard unity, foster dialogue, heal divisions, and accompany the journey of the people entrusted to your care. Pope Leo also urged the bishops to remain close to young people, seminarians, and migrants. He said a church at peace within herself can speak more freely to other Christians, other religions, and non-believers.
And last night, the Holy Father speaking to some 80,000 people at the football or soccer stadium in Madrid. He began by telling the massive crowd, "I imagine that for a football player, scoring a goal in this stadium is something that leaves a lasting mark on their life. But today," he said, "the church in Madrid has scored truly an unforgettable goal." Holy Father turning the attention from a worldly win to a deeper one, speaking to the 80,000 people from the diocesan community of Madrid, he praised them for building a beautiful ecclesial family. In the speech, he recognized the importance and beauty of song and music and challenged everyone to relearn the spiritual art of kindness, without which, he said, even the proclamation of the gospel does risk becoming impersonal repetition, losing effectiveness, and leaving room for frustration and distrust. In other news, a U.S. Army helicopter has gone down near the Strait of Hormuz. The Apache helicopter was reportedly flying over the critical waterway that's been blockaded by both the U.S. and Iran when it crashed amid an ongoing ceasefire. It happened early this morning, local time, the president acknowledging the incident as he boarded Air Force One to return to the White House after watching the Knicks take on the Spurs in game number 3 of the NBA Finals. He told reporters the pilots are fine, there were no injuries, and a report will be coming soon. President Trump has since former Attorney General Pam Bondi was let go by Trump. The president had said last week he was going to make the move to make his former criminal defense attorney his permanent AG. And Scott Carr tells us the head of the federally indicted Southern Poverty Law Center will testify before the House today.
Former Georgia state representative and niece of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., Alveda King, will go before the House Judiciary Committee to answer questions concerning allegations that the civil rights nonprofit funneled millions in funds to the extremist groups they said they were fighting. The indictment by the Justice Department says the tax-exempt funds were used for purchasing materials for KKK robes, facilitating cross-burnings, and funding travel for extremist rallies. I'm Scott Carr in Washington.
There will be a large multi-agency law enforcement presence at the upcoming Men's College World Series taking place in Omaha, and officials say they again will be watching closely for human trafficking that can happen at big events like this.
So we're standing vigilant for anyone who might come into our state, into Omaha, to take advantage of this event by trafficking vulnerable individuals. You know, one thing I'd say to the public is we have amazing partnerships here in the state of Nebraska, state, local, and federal partners. But the most important partner we have is the public.
That's Eugene Cowell, the special agent in charge of the FBI's Omaha field office, who says if you see something, report it to police. Wastewater will be screened during World Cup matches for infectious diseases outbreaks. Epidemiologists have set up a command post in a vacant lab at Georgetown. They'll be monitoring sewage and internet chat to detect and track outbreaks should they occur in any of the host cities in North America. More than 6.5 million people are expected to travel from 100 countries to watch the 104 matches in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, beginning this week, June 11th, and running through July 19th. And Mark Mayfield tells us a Somali referee selected for the FIFA World Cup was denied entry to the U.S. over the weekend because of vetting concerns.
According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the referee landed at Miami International Airport on Saturday after traveling from Istanbul, where he was subjected to additional screening. CBP described the incident as a routine step used to verify a traveler's information and determine admissibility. After that review, officers ruled the referee inadmissible and refused entry, but did not go into detail. Somalia remains one of the countries affected by the Trump administration's travel restrictions, which impose limits on certain nationals entering the U.S. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Closing arguments are set for today in the Carmelo Anthony murder trial taking place in Texas. The now 19-year-old Anthony is charged in the April 2025 stabbing death of 17-year-old Austin Metcalf during a confrontation at a high school track meet in Frisco. The defense resting late yesterday, and the prosecutor and defense lawyers say they had no more evidence to offer on the fourth day of trial. The trial is racially charged with crowds of demonstrators outside the courthouse for both Anthony, who was black, and Metcalf, who was white. If convicted, Anthony could be facing life in prison. And Wendy Swanson tells us today's show host Savannah Guthrie is now sharing a new message in her plea for her mother's return.
The message comes during the fourth month into the search for Nancy Guthrie, who was reported missing back in February. Authorities believe she was abducted from her Arizona home, although no suspects have been publicly identified. Guthrie shared an Instagram story featuring a photo of a painting appearing to depict the ascension of Jesus Christ, accompanied by the words, "Oh my soul, it cries out, soul, it cries out." She also wrote, quote, "Bring her home." The Guthrie family continues to ask the public to share any information that could lead to Nancy's return. In Arizona, I'm Wendy Swanson.
Primaries are being held in four states on Tuesday. It's today, of course. North Dakota, South Carolina, Nevada, and Maine are holding contests for the U.S. House, Senate, and governor races. Maine's Democratic Senate primary has garnered national attention with embattled candidate Graham Plattner facing a slew of allegations about a tattoo resembling a Nazi symbol he later had covered up, and several women reporting volatile relationships in the past, with one reporting even physical abuse. Plattner is expected to win and face Republican incumbent Senator Susan Collins. The scientists at the U.S. Geological Survey are busy looking into an earthquake that struck just off the western coast of Cuba. USGS scientist Dara Goldberg said this quake was strong for a part of the world that isn't active for earthquakes.
This is the largest instrumentally recorded earthquake in the Gulf of America since at least 1950.
The magnitude of the quake, by the way, 6.1, and its depth 26 kilometers. Goldberg said this earthquake formed on the same tectonic plate rather than at a plate boundary. Chris Caraggio tells us, and we'll talk more about this in 2 cents next hour, about an annual report released yesterday, a report that says the well-being of children in the U.S. is declining.
The Annie E. Casey Foundation's Kids Count report looks at family finances, education, health, and home and community conditions. The private philanthropy group ranks Mississippi last for children's well-being, just below New Mexico. New Hampshire ranks best overall, with Massachusetts next. The report says most states are worse off than they were 5 years ago, with education taking the biggest hit. I'm Chris Caraggio.
And an effort to combat air traffic control staffing shortages hit a national first yesterday. The University of Oklahoma says 22-year-old Curtis Harris is the first person in the country to finish the faster FAA-approved college track to become a certified air traffic controller. The new route lets qualified grads skip the FAA Academy in Oklahoma City and train at airport towers instead. OU says the goal is to get controllers into towers sooner as the FAA deals with a nationwide shortage. Well, there's no shortage of good news here this morning. We've got a great story coming up for you in the next segment here on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. We are going to join one of the pilgrims. Her name is Mary Carmen, and she's been involved in the National Eucharistic Congress pilgrimage. So exciting, especially with everything going on and all the great publicity our Holy Father is getting after that powerful Eucharistic procession in Spain this past Eucharistic Sunday. We'll join up on the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage Journey. Stay tuned. We are indeed pilgrims on a journey, and more specifically, a beautiful journey that we're joining right now with our guest, the lovely Mary Carmen Zakrajsek. And she's been with the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage Journey since its beginning this year. And Mary, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're probably a little bit worn out, but let's get some background in terms of, first of all, why did you decide, my dear, that you wanted to be a part of this wonderful event?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Truthfully, I decided to apply for this pilgrimage because I wanted really just to put myself under the gaze of Jesus again, and I really wanted to realign myself under his kingship, under his sovereignty, I was kind of in a point in my life where I was going through some life transitions and some desolation, and just felt like this was really an invitation from the Lord to get to be with Him up close and personal and have Him really speak His truth to my heart.
And so what's it been like? Kind of take us through this journey so far. Where are you actually located right now? And what does this involve? How many hours a day? I know you stop at parishes. Share with us some detail, if you would.
Sure. So right now I am in Washington State Park in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, in Maryland. We are currently doing a Eucharistic procession around the first monument built to George Washington. So this pilgrimage is in the year of the 250th anniversary of our country. And so it's a way to really unite ourselves as one nation under God, to pray in thanksgiving for God's blessings, and also to ask for His continued mercy and grace upon us. And so we're passing through a lot of historical sites along the Eastern Seaboard this summer. Of course, Archdiocese of Baltimore is the first Catholic diocese in America. And so just a really beautiful opportunity to unite both our faith and our country in one. And yeah, it's been drinking from a fire hose, to say the least. Packed days, lots of masses and holy hours, processions each day, but also time to really spend with the community. So today we have a young adult event. Later this evening, tomorrow, we'll have coffee with those experiencing homelessness at a nearby parish. So it's just a great opportunity to get to meet the communities around the country.
So are you, I'm sure you're posting on social media and sharing with folks. If folks want to catch up with you online, how do they find you?
Yeah, well, I would recommend following Eucharistic Revival, our Instagram page. We are putting out videos and photos of what the different days have looked like. Also, if you just want to follow us geographically, you can go to the website, eucharisticpilgrimage.org, and you can follow along each day what diocese we'll be in and what our events are.
We're talking with Mary Carmen Zakrajsek, and she's one of the amazing pilgrims that have joined the beautiful National Eucharistic Pilgrimage Journey, which is wrapping up for our 250th anniversary coming up very, very soon. So are most of the people along with you doing the whole journey, Mary Carmen, or are there some people, you know, hopping in for maybe a day or two and then and going back to work? How is that functioning in terms of those joining?
Yeah, so there will be, across the course of this pilgrimage, like tens of thousands of faithful Catholics joining us, but only 9 of us are traveling the whole route with Jesus in the van, and then we'll have a chaplain or two that will come and rotate about every week or two, every 10 days. But it's been really cool. I've actually gotten to meet 2 people who have also started in St. Augustine, Florida, and are still with us. I've been seeing them at the different events at the parishes, and they've been also making the full trek, so that's been awesome. But some people come just for the days that we're in their diocese. A couple people have traveled like hours from their rural hometown to come meet us where we are. That's been really powerful, just to see like the hunger and the thirst of people really traveling from all over to encounter Jesus in a personal way.
So what's been the response? I mean, I know I'm sure that there are many people who are welcoming you, but, you know, this, we live in a very divided country, unfortunately. A lot of people that don't actually know maybe what is a monstrance and what do we mean by Eucharistic procession or pilgrimage. Have you had run-ins at all with those who may not understand what this is about?
Yeah, you know, it has been, there's been a varying response depending on which part of the country we're in, the different dioceses. You know, when we started off in St. Augustine, Florida, our first procession, it was downtown through the streets of St. Augustine. And I would say, by and large, the people were very receptive. They were very open and curious. A lot of them were asking what was happening, and we got to explain it to them. And by and large, it was pretty positive. When we got to the Diocese of Savannah, I would say, I don't know if it was just more of a touristy area or people were polite, but they were kind of closed off or kind of weren't interested in engaging further. But of course, we know like we don't let that discourage us. We continue on. I would say the most powerful encounters have been with the poor, with those experiencing homelessness on the streets that see us. That's been really beautiful, because I have really been inspired by them and their trust in the Lord, and reminded of my own spiritual poverty. So, yeah, we've had a mix of everything, but continuing to evangelize along the way and just hope that some of the seeds we plant will bear fruit.
So what do you hope to gain at the end of the day when you're finished with this and wrapped up? I mean, you're probably gathering so many, as you just said, inspirational moments and probably taking a lot of notes and photos. But what's your primary goal with this, Mary Carmen, do you think, spiritually?
I think spiritually, I am hoping for a deeper interior conversion.
Mm.
I'm hoping and praying that my own faith and hope will be increased, and that the various sacrifices or hardships that I experience just on a natural basis during the pilgrimage can ultimately bear fruit for all the prayer intentions that are being entrusted to us as a team. We were receiving hundreds, if not thousands, of prayer intentions, and people are really opening their hearts to us about prayers they're requesting along the way. And being so close to the Eucharistic Lord, I'm hoping that it'll not only produce a deeper conversion for me, but also for all the intentions that are entrusted to me, that it will bear fruit.
So this, I imagine, has had a huge impact on the importance of Eucharistic adoration for you.
Yeah. Truly, I've realized that Jesus does not wait to come to us until we are worthy. He comes to us regardless, because he loves mm-hmm. us. And in the Eucharist, he humbles himself so completely. It is mind-boggling how much our God comes close to us, even when we feel like we don't deserve it or we're not worthy to be in his presence. Yeah.
It's so powerful, though. I was just telling you the experience that my husband, Deacon Dom, and I had over the weekend when we were at the procession for the Miraculous Corporal in Orvieto for Corpus Christi, and how emotional we both were and just being there. And you know, we it's hard to wrap our minds around it. And we know what the Eucharist is. We know it's a body, blood, soul, divinity of our Lord. But when you see mm-hmm. something that has actual blood stains that have been confirmed as a miracle and you're looking at it, that really hits home. And it just reminded me of how important it is to take Jesus to the streets however we can.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I have... it's been really cool, the moments where we have adoration, the monsters, like, you know, Jesus exposed in the van as we drive, and to look out my window and to see not only like the rolling hills and just the landscape, and then to look back at the monstrance and then back out the window and be like, wow, like, this is God made flesh.
Yeah.
He's here in this van, and he made everything that I'm seeing outside of my window.
Wow. Well, I look forward to, hopefully you can check in with us as we get closer. What's the final stop for you? Tell our folks listening, if they're not
yes.
familiar with the route you're taking, real quickly.
So we are processing all the way up to Maine, and then we will end 4th of July weekend in Philadelphia, just a couple blocks away from Independence Hall, where the Declaration of Independence was first signed 250 years ago. So my birthday is also on July 4th, so selfishly I'm excited to be there for that too. But we will end in Philly.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for joining us. I know that you have a little bit of a cold, so stay healthy and stay strong.
Thank you.
Is Auntie T saying stay very hydrated while you're walking, my dear, okay, and being there on this beautiful pilgrimage. And again, tell us how we can follow this wonderful route.
Yes, please follow us on our website at eucharisticpilgrimage.org. You can pledge your holy hours, submit your prayer intentions, and then also follow us on social media at Eucharistic_Revival.
God bless you, Mary Carmen, and keep in touch. Look forward to catching up with you. We'll be right back. Just chatting with David Jurczak, president of the beautiful Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island. And Mackinac Island received the distinction 4 years in a row by USA Today as best family-friendly place to vacation. I tell you, it's gorgeous, but so is the hotel. And they've also received some very recent distinctions, and we'll discuss that. David, great to have you back on the program, and looking forward to joining you again, God willing. Gosh, it's not that far away in August for the next Grand Hotel getaway. How are you?
Very good. It's great to hear from you, and look forward to seeing you in August, beginning of August. It's going to be a great, great event.
Yes, as always. And so bragging rights. First of all, I know that the Grand Hotel, we were chatting during the break, has received some recent and new additional recognitions, as if you didn't have enough already, for goodness sake.
Well,
why not add more to it, right?
So, one of our values of the company is stay hungry, stay humble. And so you're not being better, but you got to be a little humble. But hard to be humble at Grand Hotel. Fantastic. The number of awards and recognitions that we've received recently. You know, the USA Today is spectacular, but, you know, I'm looking at the way of Time Magazine listed as the 14th most in the state. Great. Best of Detroit, Chicago, First Nation, outside of the list goes on and on.
Okay, we're having a hard time hearing you. What I'm thinking is maybe if we can reconnect with you, because it's your phone is going in and out. We will we'll hang up with you and we'll reconnect. In the meantime, I can certainly fill a minute or two and talk about the event. I just want to give you the details of the Grand Getaway on Mackinac Island. We call it the Grand Getaway because it is held at the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island. And here's the details. It's August 9th through the 11th on Mackinac Island. And just a brief summary, be refreshed and renewed during this highly acclaimed getaway at one of America's most historic hotels together. We will have daily mass presentations by our acclaimed speakers, extraordinary meals, dancing to the Grand Hotel Orchestra, and much, much more. And this year, one of our featured speakers, and I would say he would be the highlight, is going to be the amazing Bishop Robert Barron will be joining us. And he'll be celebrating mass with us, of course. He will be giving us wonderful talks. He will be sharing information on his new movie about beauty in the Catholic faith and several different basilicas in France that's coming out in September. So it is going to be an incredible opportunity. And all you need to do is go to the corporate travel website at ctscentral.net for more information on the Grand Hotel Getaway. Okay, David, I think we're back. I just want to make sure that we could hear you clearly. All right, so repeat what you were saying about the recognitions that you've been getting recently at the Grand Hotel.
No, it's just, you know, countless number of magazines and different of venues have listed us spectacular events. Like I was just reading a couple. Time Out magazine listed us the 14 pools in the U.S. worth planning a trip around. Best of Detroit from Our Detroit. Chicago listed us as the number one summer destination for families. So, we try to be humble. We try to... play it off, but there's so many things that tell people they should come to Mackinac Island and come to Grand Hotel. One of the other ones, I'll jump in, USA Today, not only the number one summer destination, Mackinac Island, but USA Today, 10 hotels with over-the-top family suites that come with a little something extra. So, you know, families are love to be here out at the pool, out on the porch, getting, you know, the pictures, taking family pictures. There's so much to do on the island and the hotel.
Mm-hmm. It is so family-friendly. What does it mean to you? Because I know you're a fellow brother in the Lord. What does it mean for you to be able to offer these kinds of opportunities for families?
I mean, it's fantastic. You know, one of the great things about Grand Hotel is every evening is a celebration, which means you have to dress up. So, you know, fathers, you know, have to be a coat and tie. Mothers dressed appropriately. The children 12 and over have to be dressed just as an adult. But I can see moms beaming that they get their kids dressed up and they get the family out on the front porch to take that family photo. And we found out with my phone not necessarily working very well. The one great thing about here as well is that I don't see kids on their phones. I don't see families on their phones. I see families eating dinner, talking to each other. I see families out in the parlor or out on the porch, hanging out together, phones down, phones in pockets, or in the rooms, that they're spending really quality time together, riding bikes, doing whatever they do on the island, but they're really together. And I've worked in hotels all over the United States. I can't say I see that anywhere else than here.
Mm. What's it like for you, again, picking up on this whole family theme? Because in addition to the hotel, the activities on the island are so unique. There's no cars. You have the horse-drawn carriages. You have horseback riding. You have the fort on Mackinac Island, the main street with the fudge shops. I mean, everything is geared toward family. When you look out from your office at the Straits of Mackinac, it must be a really good feeling for you.
You know, it's spectacular. I tell people all the time, I don't drive a car for 7 months. And so whether it's 3 days or 7 months, if you take cars out of your life and the speed in which you move in a car, so think about today when you leave the show, you're going to park at the parking lot, you're going to get in the car, and you're going to go from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. You're really not going to talk to anybody. You're not going to see anybody. really, but you get to your destination. Here, destination is the purpose. So if you walk or ride a bike or in a horse and carriage, you slow down your life. Everything slows down. You see other people. You say hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to people. You make eye contact to people. Everything in your life slows down, and it's more purposeful here on the island than, again, I'd say it anywhere else.
With all your hotel experience around the country, now being in such a beautiful place such as Mackinac Island, not that you haven't worked at, obviously, other great places, but in terms of the Grand Hotel Getaway, as someone who loves to promote family activities, what does it mean to you to see this take place every year at your hotel?
And you know, I'm proud of this event. I mean, to have, you know, Christians show up and gather and fellowship together with families, it's something special. It's a destination built for this event, and we're proud to host it. We're proud every year that, you know, and God willing, John continues to keep bringing this event back to us. And we do a lot of events similar backing. We have the Knights of Columbus, which is the Catholic organization of men and their wives and families come and visit in May. We have Winds and Women, another event that's all women around women's travel. And I think that spirit-driven and Christ-driven events come to this island for a purpose. I think there's maybe a calling, but also I believe that the space does present well for those types of groups and groups that want to slow down and want to be purposeful in their visit and want to fellowship together. It is the space to be.
Have you ever met Bishop Barron or Monsignor James Patrick Shea, who's also speaking this year?
I haven't. Look forward to meeting him.
Yeah,
you guys bring
they're
the best. Speakers.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, John Hale does a great job of organizing these incredible, influential speakers. I mean, Bishop Barron is just—it's hard to describe him. He's a wonderful, obviously, priest and bishop, but he's just such a great communicator. And then, of course, Monsignor Shea is the same. And talk about these two together. Not to mention Rachel, who's going to be one of our speakers, but also serving as EMC, Rachel Bullman. It's going to be just a beautiful, beautiful time. So, folks, we have to wrap up. And any last thoughts, David, before we let you go and encouraging people to think about the Grand Hotel Getaway?
No, I think everybody needs to get online today and look at the opportunities to come. If you haven't made your reservation, make them now. I know that rooms are, you know, we have some availability in this group right now, but I know those will go quick as people start, you know, looking at summer and planning their summer. I know kids are wrapping up school, and now everybody's really thinking about what they're going to do for summer. You know, don't be left out. I think everybody needs to go out there today and take a look at what the opportunities are to be here for those few days here on the island. It's well worth the travel.
Yeah, I'm on the website, the ctscentral.net website, looking at the picture of the Grand and that great angle that shot up to the porch with the American flags. And especially this summer, when we're celebrating our 250th anniversary as a country, this is so patriotic. This is so Americana. We hope to see you there. It's coming up in August. We'll be doing Catholic Connection Live. Bishop Robert Barron and Monsignor Shea. Can you believe it? It's all true. CTScentral.net. Thanks, David. God bless you. See you soon. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection. Great to catch up with Stephen Auth. And you have to check out this beautiful mini-series. Peter Gagnon mentioned it on Friday on our Inside World. Visions of the Divine. And it's all about Eucharist in art. Fabulous. Of course, Stephen has written a book similar to this. Stephen, great to catch up with you again. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me again, Teresa.
All right, so tell us about this project. I was online looking at it this morning on our website. Absolutely gorgeous. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, several years ago, as Evelyn and I were thinking about our next project, it really struck me that something about the Mass and art, because you know, art was always a way, sacred art, a way for the church to help the laity and even the clergy to enter into the mystery of the Mass itself. And after the Reformation in 1517, you know, the art got pulled out of the churches. It's still in some churches in Europe, but even those were kind of turned into museums. A lot of the art was destroyed. The rest ended up in museums. The theologians took over explaining the mystery of the Eucharist. They write these great books to each other. The lay can't don't read them. The art historians took over the art at the museums, but they don't want to mention God, and the art's about God. And the laity have been left on their own. So What Evelyn and I did was we went on a pilgrimage over several years to 20 different cities in Europe and the U.S. to find the art of the Mass and then recurate it inside the Mass liturgy. And we worked with Monsignor Roger Landry on this project, who led the Eucharistic procession, national procession to National Prayer Congress. And then, well, there we were. You know, once you started doing that and reorganizing the art inside the Mass, it became a visual prayer guide to the Mass itself. And I don't know, it's just a very beautiful project. It's helped me a lot visualize what's happening in the Mass and focus more. Sometimes I tend to get distracted at Mass, and it's really helped me. I mean, I always think the Lord puts me on these projects partly to fix me first, and then maybe someone else gets help too. But, you know, it gives you these great visuals throughout the Mass. And then, you know, we worked with EWTN, who wanted to make it into this miniseries. And those guys do such a beautiful job. They really create it in a way, a work of art in the project, I think.
I think so, too. And they worked on a series that I did on St. Francis for the Mission Advancement Team, and the photography and the editing. And it's so complicated, and you have to really know what you're doing in order to bring the message across. Not that the art certainly doesn't help and lend itself to somewhat of an easier project because it's so beautiful, but you still have to be able to present it well. And I love what you said about how God uses us to work on ourselves. I would totally agree with that. But when I was working on my latest book and also the project with EWTN for Mission Advancement, I felt myself really thinking, wow, I didn't know as much as I should have about this great saint. And I was kind of mad at myself and really disappointed that I put St. Francis in a box. And it changed my whole perspective on him. And I'm sure that happened to you as well. But I was thinking in looking over the series, Stephen, that the timing on this in terms of releasing it could not be more perfect. If you think about all this emphasis on Eucharistic pilgrimages, we've just had a young woman on talking about the Eucharistic pilgrimage for the 250th anniversary, continuation of the Eucharistic Congress, and of course the Holy Father talking about the importance of the Eucharist. All of this seems to be coming together perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, God's providence. You know, EWTN and I and my wife were working on this project for several years, but they really wanted it to come out this year because of all that you just said. They actually released it as, you know, live last week heading into, you know, Corpus Christi Sunday. So, yeah, the timing couldn't have been better. The visuals are spectacular. And we adventure our way to places that even folks who spent a lot of time going around to art in Europe haven't heard of or never been to, that really make it interesting and intriguing. And what's really interesting, Teresa, when you start putting together the art, the liturgy, and a deeper understanding of the faith, like mysteries in the art itself, which have stood for 500 years, all start crumbling down. You see it in the context. There's a painting, I'm not sure if you've ever been, I know you go to Florence a lot. Have you ever been to San Felicita? It's a little tiny church.
No, but I think you mentioned this to me. Do tell, please. Yeah,
and there's a painting there, an artist, a Catholic artist, you may know, Donnie McManus. He said, Steve, you got to go to see this painting. We go over there. And, you know, Pontormo was a late Renaissance artist, early Mannerist artist. He paints after the sack of Rome, so it's in the 1530s. And he and others are trying to find a new form of art that's a little more energetic, more mobile, if you will, than the very fixed Italian art. And he paints this painting called The Deposition from the Cross. And for years, it's been kind of panned a little bit. You know, it's got these psychedelic colors. And Mary is in the painting, in the upper right, and she's releasing the body of Jesus through the arms of an angel onto the back of a young man who we presume is John. And all the figures are sort of floating, and which has always made art historians kind of crazy, is that unlike all Renaissance art to this point, there's a void between Mary and Jesus. Mary's in the upper right of the painting. Jesus is in the lower left. and he's actually sliding across the back of John into nothingness. But when you go and look at it in the context, you see everything, how it fits together. So what's happening is Mary is releasing Jesus. She creates a void. He slides across John's back, the church. Mary's the mother of the church. And right below John at his feet is the altar. So Jesus is sliding down onto the altar. This is, we use this for the prayer about the holy and living sacrifice during the Eucharistic liturgy. And it's, Jesus is the holy and living sacrifice. And when you kneel down at the altar, which on our third visit, well, we kneel down every time we go to the altar, but on a third visit there, it finally occurred to Evelyn and I, as you look up from your perspective on kneeling on the altar, and imagine the priest a little later in the liturgy holding up the Lamb of God, the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. The Eucharist is in the void, is in the plane of your eye. It's right in the void. It's the Eucharist that fills the void.
Wow.
That's left by Jesus' death. So Pontormo was a really deep guy, but he was misunderstood. You have to really look at the art in the context. But it also helps you understand at that point in the Mass what's actually happening. You know, Jesus is being reoffered as a sacrifice on the altar. And then he's replaced, if you will, or becomes the Eucharist itself.
Wow. Powerful. Talking with author Stephen Auth, and he, along with Monsignor Roger Landry, through the beautiful series Visions of the Divine, lead us on an artistic journey into the mystery of the Eucharist and the Mass by exploring some of the most artistic masterpieces ever created. So where do you go in addition to, obviously, Italy, which has so much great art? Where else do you go in the series?
Well, we go to Madrid. We go to Paris. We go to Vienna. We go to New York, of course. We go to Washington, D.C. We go to the Getty Museum in Los Angeles. And then we go to some really out-of-the-way places, like the Kelvin Grove Museum in Glasgow. My wife is a co-author, but not a member of the series. She doesn't do video. But, you know, we're up there in Glasgow, and Evelyn's saying, Steve, why are we in Glasgow? I say, we're going to see one painting. And the painting we went to see is Dali's Christ of St. John of the Cross, which he painted after his conversion to Catholicism. Got him thrown out of the school of Surrealism, which he founded, by the way, because they didn't think a modern artist should paint Catholic paintings. Mm. And we used that painting. We knew what we were going to use it for when we went there. It was worth the trip. It's this incredible, spectacular painting that stands alone in this room. You know, it's bigger than life. It's another 8 feet tall. And you see, we use it for one of the signs of the cross that we make during the Mass liturgy. There's at least eight times, by our count, that Catholics make the sign of the cross during the Mass. And so a subtext of the series, although we don't do all eight in the miniseries, we do in the book, but you do see this sort of history of how the cross liturgy evolves. I mean, you've got some great crosses in crucifixes in your book on Italy, you know, the Siambui mm-hmm. cross, crucifix, et cetera. But in this case, we go to Dali. It's at the very end of the series, so episode 5, near the end, and we're making the sign of the cross as we're leaving church and have been sent forth. And you look at the painting, and what's disturbing about it for both theologians and art historians was that at the top of the painting, you're in heaven, and heaven is black. This is the first time heaven had ever been painted as black. It's always painted as light. But you can imagine it's God the Father looking down on this scene. You're looking down the crucifixion from above, and he's in mourning for his Son. So it's in the name of the Father. And then you look at the cross itself. And one of the things that's interesting, if you look back at the original sketch that St. John drew back in the 13th century and the version of Dali, Dali's left out the stakes, the nails that hold Jesus to the cross. But Jesus is holding himself to the cross. This is the agape love of the cross that Monsignor Landry talks about in the miniseries. And it's in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son. And then you look more carefully and you see that the cross is not in the ground anymore. It's rising. That's the Holy Spirit. He's bringing Jesus back to the Father, though, and of the Holy Spirit. And then you look down from above and you see that all the light of heaven has been poured onto this lake that's shimmering in the light of heaven, every last photon. And down in the lake, you see a little boat. That's the bark of Peter, the church. That's the boat. It's empty. We have to get into the boat and go out. You know, we go from the Mass and we change the world with the Eucharist. That's the Amen.
Stephen, this is phenomenal. Thank you for doing this, and thank you for sharing it with us and spending some time. We're out of time right now, but I want to remind folks to check out this beautiful series, Visions of the Divine, all over the world, United States, France, Italy, Spain, you name it. 5 episodes, a beautiful mini-series and teaching with our friend, author Stephen Roth, and Monsignor Roger Landry leading us on this artistic journey. Incredible. Thank you so much. I can't wait to see what else you produce. But seriously, this is the kind of series, Stephen, you can spend a lot of time with and rewatch the episodes because it's so beautifully done. Thank you, my friend. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Teresa.
The best way to find it, Stephen, would be to go to our website, EWTN.com.
Yeah, absolutely. It's streaming on EWTN On Demand.
Great. Thanks, my dear. Tell Evelyn I said hello, and we will be in touch soon. Love to have you back on to talk more about it, maybe breaking down one or two of the episodes. Again, you can find it, EWTN On Demand, or just go to EWTN.com and put in Visions of the Divine. It is a Tuesday morning. We'll let you know it's coming up in hour number 2 when we come back. Stay tuned. Chatting with Stephen Roth about his beautiful miniseries that he did with Monsignor Landry reminds me of a movie. I was just checking this out over the weekend that Bishop Barron is releasing this fall. Bishop Barron, God willing, is going to be with us, I think, next week. We're working on nailing that down. But he has a new movie coming out about different cathedrals in France, including, of course, Notre Dame. And if you remember the Bishop's original series on Catholicism, talk about beauty and blowing your mind in terms of religion and art. And again, Stephen, myself, Bishop Barron, all of us who are involved in pilgrimage or, you know, leading people to various places, whether it be stateside or overseas, believe that beauty really has an impact on a person and can really get them thinking about, hopefully, God and the church, but at least moving them out of themselves, which is the point of why we do what we do. And speaking of doing what we do, we have hour number 2 of Catholic Connection coming up. This time is on EWTN Radio Extra, and we are going to have a wonderful 2 segments, actually, with Kelly Solomon from Newman Guide News, looking at the headlines recently with education and some different topics, especially during Pride Month, and then also called Pride Month, I should say. More importantly, the Sacred Heart of Jesus is the month we celebrate in the Catholic Church. For 2 cents, I want to take a deeper look at that story, which we ran for you and will be re-airing, of course, and we do the news live in just a few minutes again. About the well-being of children, we keep seeing these reports over and over and over again about the impact that COVID continues to have. We're going to talk about that up next. We will be right back on EWTN's Radio Extra. Hope you can tune in.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Tuesday morning. I hope it's going well for you and you're having a great day so far. It's June 9th, 2026. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. And as we say every day here at Catholic Connection, this is hour number two on EW10's Radio Extra. Thanks so much for joining us, and we hope that you'll enjoy the program. Of course, it's a Tuesday, so that means that we are going to be chatting for two segments with our dear friend Kelly Solomon from the Cardinal Newman Society. So what are we going to be talking about this morning? Well, a number of different topics, including Pope Leo's talk to Catholic colleges, Pope Catholic universities must lead students to Christ. That was a story that came out last week in Vatican News, but a very good one. And then we're going to be talking about these stories, which are rather disturbing. Well, this particular one, LGBTQ affirming lavender graduations persisting at prominent Catholic colleges. And then last but not least, just the opposite. And you see beautiful graduation speakers at Newman Guide schools inspiring faith, joyful minds, and hearts. So we have a couple of topics to discuss with the one, the only, Kelly Solomon, and this is on our Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Also this morning, in two cents, we're going to take a deeper dive into a story you're going to hear in the news this morning, if you haven't heard it yet. It's about how kids are doing. What's their well-being 6 years after COVID? There's a few positive developments, but most of all, it shows the negative impact that COVID has had and why we need to do more. So I want to take a look at that, especially in terms of something that the Church has been addressing greatly, especially with the Holy Father's new encyclical, in terms of concerns about media usage and isolation. So much to discuss on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Okay, let's take a look at the forecast before we get to the news on a Tuesday. We have a number of severe storms, according to the National Weather Service, with a potential for severe wind gusts, tornadoes, some potentially strong, and very large hail are expected in parts of the central and northern plains. Heavy rainfall may bring a flooding threat to parts of the northern plains and from the Ohio Valley to the southeast. Fire weather concerns persist in the Four Corners region, and hot and humid weather is expected in the central part of the country. So summer is here, even though it's not technically here on the calendar yet, apparently. It is 2 minutes past the hour. Thanks for listening to EWTN's Radio Extra. Let's get started on the Tuesday with the news. Well, Pope Leo has left Madrid and is now in Barcelona, but yesterday had a really good meeting and a very important one, several actually, first with victims of abuse by members of the clergy in Spain, according to a statement from Matteo Bruni, who's a director of the Holy See Press Office. In the message, Bruni noted that the Holy Father met with six abuse victims who were accompanied by church personnel engaged in supporting and accompanying victims. He said during that conversation, which lasted nearly an hour, each of those present drew on their own painful personal experiences, offered the Pope a number of proposals aimed at making the Church's response to such tragic cases more effective. And even the members that were there, those who suffered abuse, said they felt the Holy Father was taking on their own pain on a very personal level. And on the third day of his apostolic journey to Spain yesterday, Devin Watkins reports, the Holy Father reminded the country's bishops that the Church's true wealth lies in the holiness of her children.
Meeting with the bishops of Spain and Madrid on Monday, Pope Leo XIV encouraged their faith and commitment despite the many challenges facing the Church. He recalled that Christ leads the Church and determines her rhythm, saying pastors are called to walk as members of His one body. Pope Leo noted that ours is a time marked by polarization and division. He said the Church in Spain is called to offer a witness to unity in diversity, embracing the richness of gifts, charisms, and sensibilities present among the people of God.
Con la fortaleza de conservar como un tesoro.
The strength of the Church, he said, does not come from the greatness of her resources, but from the holiness of her children, from the communion of her pastors, and from the humble and persevering fidelity of those who allow themselves to be guided by the Spirit. The Pope told the bishops that their ministry is to be a visible sign of communion with Christ, with the Pope, and with all elements of the Church in Spain.
Estamos llamados a ser principio visible de comunión.
Your mission, he said, calls you to safeguard unity, foster dialogue, heal divisions, and accompany the journey of the people entrusted to your care. Pope Leo also urged the bishops to remain close to young people, seminarians, and migrants. He said a church at peace within herself can speak more freely to other Christians, other religions, and non-believers.
And last night, the Holy Father, speaking to some 80,000 people at the football or soccer stadium in Madrid, he began by telling the huge crowd, "I imagine that for a football player, scoring a goal in this stadium is something that leaves a lasting remark on their lives. But today," he said, "the Church of Madrid has scored a truly unforgettable goal." Again, the Pope turning the attention from a worldly win to a deeper one, speaking to the thousands there from the diocesan community of Madrid. He praised them for building what he said was a beautiful ecclesial family. In his speech, the Holy Father recognized the importance of beauty of song and music and challenged everyone to relearn the spiritual art of kindness, without which, he said, even the proclamation of the gospel risks becoming impersonal, repetitious, and losing effectiveness and leaving room for frustration and distrust. In other news this morning, a U.S. Army helicopter has gone down near the Strait of Hormuz. The Apache helicopter was reportedly flying over the critical waterway that's been blockaded by both the U.S. and Iran when it crashed amid an ongoing ceasefire. It happened early this morning, local time, President Trump acknowledging the incident as he boarded Air Force One to return to the White House after watching the Knicks take on the Spurs in Game 3 of the NBA Finals. He told reporters the pilots are fine, there were no injuries, and a report will be coming soon. And the president has formally nominated Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche to take over the role permanently. Blanche has led the department since former Attorney General Pam Bondi was fired by the president. President Trump said last week he was going to move to make his former criminal defense attorney his permanent attorney general. Scott Carr tells us the head of the federally indicted Southern Poverty Law Center will testify before the House today.
Representative and niece of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., Alveda King, will go before the House Judiciary Committee to answer questions concerning allegations that the civil rights nonprofit funneled millions in funds to the extremist groups they said they were fighting. The indictment by the Justice Department says the tax-exempt funds were used for purchasing materials for KKK robes, facilitating cross-burnings, and funding travel for extremist rallies. I'm Scott Carr in Washington.
There will be a large multi-agency law enforcement presence at the Men's College World Series in Omaha, which is soon to be taking place, and they again will be watching closely for human trafficking that can happen at such events like the CWS.
So we're standing vigilant for anyone who might come into our state, into Omaha, take advantage of this event by trafficking vulnerable individuals. You know, one thing I'd say to the public is we have amazing partnerships here in the state of Nebraska. State, local, and federal partners, but the most important partner we have is the public.
That's Eugene Cowell, the special agent in charge of the FBI's Omaha field office, who says if you see something, report it to police. And wastewater will be screened during World Cup matches for the infectious disease outbreaks. Epidemiologists have set up a command post in a vacant lab at Georgetown University. They'll be monitoring sewage and internet chat to detect and track outbreaks should they occur in any of the host cities in North America. More than 6.5 million people are expected to travel from 100 countries to watch the 104 matches in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, beginning this week, actually in 2 days, on June 11th through July 19th. Mark Mayfield tells us a Somali referee selected for the World Cup was denied entry to the U.S. this over the weekend because of vetting concerns.
According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the referee landed at Miami International Airport on Saturday after traveling from Istanbul, where he was subjected to additional screening. CBP described the incident as a routine step used to verify a traveler's information and determine admissibility. After that review, officers ruled the referee inadmissible and refused entry, but did not go into detail. Somalia remains one of the countries affected by the Trump administration's travel restrictions, which impose limits on certain nationals entering the U.S. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Closing arguments are set for today in the Carmelo Anthony murder trial in the state of Texas. And now 19-year-old Anthony is charged in the April 2025 stabbing death of 17-year-old Austin Metcalf during a confrontation at a high school track meet in Frisco. The defense resting late yesterday, and the prosecutor and defense lawyer saying they had no more evidence to offer. This on the fourth day of trial. That trial is racially charged with crowds of demonstrators outside the courthouse for both Anthony, who is black, and Metcalf, who is white. If convicted, Anthony could face life in prison. And Wendy Swanson tells us today's show host Savannah Guthrie is now sharing a new message in her latest plea for her mother's return.
The message comes during the fourth month into the search for Nancy Guthrie, who was reported missing back in February. Authorities believe she was abducted from her Arizona home, although no suspects have been publicly identified. Guthrie shared an Instagram story featuring a photo of a painting appearing to depict the ascension of Jesus Christ, accompanied by the words, "Oh my, my soul, it cries out, soul, it cries out." She also wrote, quote, "Bring her home." The Guthrie family continues to ask the public to share any information that could lead to Nancy's return. In Arizona, I'm Wendy Swanson.
Primaries being held in four states today, including North Dakota, South Carolina, Nevada, and Maine. They're all holding contests for the U.S. House, Senate, and governor races. Maine's Democratic Senate primary, meanwhile, garnering big-time national attention with embattled candidate Graham Plantner placing a slew of allegations about a tattoo resembling a Nazi symbol he later had covered up, and several women reporting volatile relationships in the past, with one even reporting physical abuse. Plantner is expected to win, though, and face Republican incumbent Senator Susan Collins. The scientists at the U.S. Geological Survey busy today looking into an earthquake that struck just off the western coast of Cuba. USGS scientist Dara Goldberg says this quake was strong for a part of the world that isn't that active for earthquakes.
This is the largest instrumentally recorded earthquake in the Gulf of America since at least 1950.
The magnitude of the quake was 6.1 and its depth 26 kilometers. Goldberg says this earthquake formed on the same tectonic plate rather than at a plate boundary. And Chris Caraggio has a story on a report we'll be discussing a little bit further in our 2 Cents segment coming up. It's an annual report that was released yesterday that says the well-being of children in the country, well, it's declining.
The Annie E. Casey Foundation's Kids Count Report looks at family finances, education, health, and home and community conditions. The private philanthropy group ranks Mississippi last for children's well-being, just below New Mexico. New Hampshire ranks best overall, with Massachusetts next. The report says most states are worse off than they were 5 years ago, with education taking the biggest hit. I'm Chris Caraggio.
An effort to combat air traffic control staffing shortages hit a national first yesterday. The University of Oklahoma saying 22-year-old Curtis Harris is the first person in the U.S. to finish the faster FAA-approved college track to become a certified air traffic controller. That new route lets qualified grads skip the FAA Academy in Oklahoma City and train at airport towers instead. OU says the goal is to get controllers into towers sooner as the FAA deals with a nationwide shortage. And NASA will unveil the Artemis 3 crew for the next moon mission today. During the Artemis 3 mission, 4 astronauts will launch from Kennedy Space Center in Florida aboard the Orion spacecraft to test rendezvous and docking capabilities between the spacecraft and commercial human landing systems needed to deliver astronauts to the moon's surface. This comes right on the heels of the successful Artemis 2 mission, where 3 astronauts flew around the moon in the first crewed lunar mission in over 50 years. By the way, the announcement takes place today at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. We'll have more on that tomorrow. More Catholic Connection coming your way in about 2 minutes. Stay tuned. It's a Tuesday. It's June 9th, 2026. Teresa Tomio with you in our 2 Cents segment. We appreciate your listenership. Have any questions about any of our wonderful programming, please go to EWTN.com. And you can also click on the radio button and find out a station in your area if you're a new listener or if you're just discovering us here at EWTN's Radio Extra or EWTN Radio in general. I'm going to have my stellar producer, Richard, replay a report from Chris Caraggio about this study that was just released yesterday on how children are progressing or declining since COVID. So let's take a listen to this first off.
The Annie E. Casey Foundation's Kids Count Report looks at family finances, education, health, and home and community conditions. The private philanthropy group ranks Mississippi last for children's well-being, just below New Mexico. New Hampshire ranks best overall, with Massachusetts next. The report says most states are worse off than they were 5 years ago, with education taking the biggest hit. I'm Chris Caraggio.
To me, it is just another reminder of how much was lost through COVID. Now, at the time, when we first got the news about COVID, there were so many questions. And I think in the early stages, we were doing something for precautionary reasons. I get that. But as it went on, it became just over the top ridiculous. And parents began to notice, with their children being placed at home rather than in school with other kids, the impact that the isolation had on their education, their progress, but also on the way they related and what those children were being taught. Now, here we have 5-6 years later after COVID, and we're still seeing the results. A little bit more detail. New Kids Well-Being Study highlights progress as long with persistent gaps. A major new assessment of children's well-being released yesterday shows both encouraging gains and troubling disparities in the U.S. as far as child health, education, and family outcomes. As you heard in that report, the Annie E. Casey Foundation's 36th edition of Kids Count Data Book found that after years of pandemic disruptions, more high schoolers are graduating on time, which is good news, and more children have health insurance and live with parents who are securely employed than before 2020. Child poverty and teen birth rates have gone down, and fewer children live in high poverty areas. Girls in particular saw the largest improvements in mental health after schools reopened during COVID, with diagnoses of anxiety, depression, and ADHD dropping. However, and here's the big however, despite economic improvements, children are still falling behind in education, preschool enrollment, fourth grade reading proficiency, and eighth grade math proficiency are all down compared to 2019. Pandemic learning loss remains a barrier to academic recovery. Child and teen mortality remains high, with 29 deaths per 100,000 people ages 1 through 19 in 2023, driven by firearm-related deaths and drug overdoses. And then, as you also heard in Chris Caraggio's report, the study underscores significant regional differences. Child poverty ranges from 8% in New Hampshire to 25% in Louisiana and New Mexico, and racial and ethnic disparities persist, with children of color facing greater barriers to opportunity and well-being. In some states, such as Louisiana, reading proficiency has improved, but in others, it has declined. All right, so what are the key takeaways, and why is this important to us? Well, areas of progress we mentioned earlier: economic stability, health insurance coverage, on-time high school graduation, and mental health improvements after the schools reopened. Persistent issues: educational proficiency, high child mortality still, and deep regional and racial inequalities. Now, those who put together this report said the findings call for targeted investments in education, mental health services, and safety nets to address disparities and support long-term child well-being. Now, what I think is key is what we've been seeing. A lot of the bishops, and even Pope Leo mentioning this problem with isolation and how we have to be more together with each other, with our families. And even though COVID now is, 6 years out, we're still having major problems. If you go back to the beautiful pastoral letter that was written by Bishop Burbidge of Arlington, talking about the physician, the divine physician, he looked at mental health. He mentioned the problem of isolation is still existing. And the impact that this had on children is evidence in this report. And so I think it's good that we have this, so we can see the ups, we can see the downs, but we can also understand that we have a lot of work to do still in terms of what's happening with children, especially, and the fallout from COVID. And I really wish we would have had more people, and this is where the media come in. This is a big frustration of mine back then and still is. The media questioning and really pushing some of these so-called experts who are out there saying that the best thing for the kids was to be at home and to study at home and to not put them back into that environment where they might get COVID. Maybe in the beginning, but for how long? We lost so much during that time. And again, this isolation, we're still not recovering from it. And not only are children impacted, but adults were greatly impacted. Again, if you go back to the report by Bishop Burbidge, looking at mental health in our country, this is a huge issue for so many people, to the point where in his diocese, and thanks be to God, other dioceses are picking up on this, where he has put together a whole team of vetted counselors who are from a Catholic perspective, and they are available for people who need help. And what they're finding in their research and in the Catholic counselors with whom they work is that both young people and adults are still struggling when it comes to the fallout from COVID. I'm hoping that this study helps us learn a lesson that something like that, God forbid, if there is ever another serious illness that comes along, that we look at ways, different ways to address it. Because again, we didn't know with what we were dealing in the beginning, but as far as I'm concerned, it got way too political too soon. And that resulted in so much closure, so much isolation that we're still paying for 6 years later. And so the other thing I think is important is to revisit what our church teaches us, especially when it comes to the importance of parents and families together. You know, we are at a point now, a beautiful point in this year, the 250th anniversary of our country. And we have such an opportunity to promote different events of bringing families together. So I hope people in thinking are praying, gosh, what are some unique ways that I can be with my family, that I can make sure that this summer, with technically summer beginning, what, on June 21st is the official date on the calendar, let's encourage our kids, but not just our kids, but all of us to get out of the house, even if we, you know, we're not talking about going on a big expensive vacation, if that's not in your budget, that's not a problem. There are so many beautiful things to do. Maybe go to the shrine in Champion, Wisconsin, right? That is a beautiful Marian shrine. We talked about that last week. Or maybe go to Washington for one of the events and help our kids learn about history and help us learn more about the history of our country. Again, this report, I think, is another important reminder of how much we lost with COVID and how much we need to gain in terms of recommitting ourselves to not being isolated and to be together, as opposed just being together alone in the same house but not communicating. Worth thinking and praying about. We'll be right back. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection. Great to catch up with Kelly Solomon with our Newman Guide News on a Tuesday from Cardinal Newman Society. Kelly, we have a mixture of good news and bad news. I want to start out with the good news. The Pope gave a great talk before he left for Spain about the importance of Catholic universities leading students to Christ. What a concept. What say you, my dear? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Teresa. Great to be on with you. It was such a beautiful address by the Pope mm-hmm. to these leaders of U.S. Catholic colleges, presidents, and rectors, and so reaffirming of what the mission of Catholic education should be all about. You know, he began talking about how Catholic colleges should cultivate not only a love of learning, but also a deep passion for Christ. He went on to say, Catholic institutions are called to be a living environment in which the Christian vision permeates every discipline and every interaction. That, Teresa, reminds me a lot of Pope John Paul II's encyclical on Catholic colleges, where he talks about the Catholic faith being infused into everything a Catholic mm-hmm. college does. He went on to talk about the personal example and witness of these Catholic college leaders themselves. Your authenticity as true disciples of Christ will certainly assist you in transmitting the living gospel in such a way that those entrusted to you can truly encounter our Lord and discover in the Catholic faith the unifying vision that truth alone can provide.
Wow. Does that inspire you when you see this and read what the Pope had to say in terms of what you do at the Cardinal Newman Society?
Definitely. You know, our mission is all about promoting and defending faithful Catholic education, and here's the Pope taking the time to address U.S. Catholic college leaders and calling them back to what the mission of Catholic education is all about. Teresa, the very end is actually my favorite part. He says he expresses hope to the educators that they continue to carry out the church's evangelizing mission, quote, that students will always be able to find in your institutions the sound doctrine entrusted to the church that will serve as a true and lasting foundation, not only for their lives, but for the future of the nation. And that line about sound doctrine, that's what they're going to find when they encounter a Catholic college or university or really school of any level, that commitment to the truth of the Catholic faith is something that, clearly our Pope wanted to draw these leaders back to and remind them that this is what students should find in these places. And so many Catholic educators have done such great work working for so many years to lead students to Christ through Catholic education. But we've also seen examples of how, unfortunately, many of our prominent, especially Catholic colleges, have wandered from that path of sound doctrine, there's things going on in their campuses that are confusing or misleading to students or even directly lead them astray. Of course, the Pope also talked about the use of technology in the world of AI, right, which is a theme he's been talking about a lot, especially with the recent encyclical. And this is really encouraging, I think, to educators of all levels, where he said, the prolific use of artificial intelligence makes it increasingly difficult to evaluate the work of students, requiring educators to adapt their methods creatively to ensure the integral human formation of those in their care, even when this entails more work for teachers. In this sense, we must be willing to invest generously in the education of future generations.
And I love teachers, that quote. Yeah, I love
right?
that quote.
They work so hard, and we are so grateful for those work of faithful Catholic educators who are dedicated to that integral formation. That's something he talked a lot in his encyclical about, too, the integral formation, that it's not just training and skills, training for a specific job, that education is so much bigger. It's about the formation of that whole person. And that the reality is in our time today, AI has changed things to such an extent that educators might have to do more work. They might have to do more of those in-person oral exams, right, with the class, or quick quizzes in the class to get feedback on student reading, creative ways to really gauge students' knowledge of the topic matter without just requiring long papers and things done outside of class that we know have become problematic and difficult for teachers to evaluate in this age of AI.
Yeah, I'm looking at the next quote, and I sent you the story. We're reading from the same story, but it says, it's crucial that young men and women learn to engage positively with new technologies, while at the same time, he underscored, truly developing their God-given skills and capacities to reason, think critically, and commit knowledge to memory, thus preparing them to shape responsibly the world to come. Because this is the issue, Kelly, if they can't really engage positively, and I would say not only with new technologies, but with each other, with people in the future, with their future employees, with their families. It's a whole different ballgame in terms of being able to have those skills to be used wisely.
Absolutely. But in so many, I think, educational institutions, we've kind of forgotten the foundations, the fundamentals of teaching students to read, to write, to think, to communicate clearly, to learn how to seek out truth, how to pursue wisdom, and then layering on top of it that integral development of how do we lead students to virtue and to wisdom and to those deeper meaning and purpose of life. That's what a really great education gives you, a sense of your vocation, right? What God's calling you to be and to become.
I would love to have been a fly on the wall to see the reaction. I'm sure many of these educators and these leaders of the educational institutions have good intentions, but how many of them, as you said earlier, may represent some of these schools that have been, have lost their way, basically. And I'm hoping and praying that maybe they were touched by what the Holy Father said and realize they have to get back to basics.
Absolutely. I hope they bring this message back to their campus, share it with other leaders at their institutions, say, let's recommit to to what Pope Leo and the church is asking of us, that he's asking us to give students that sound doctrine entrusted to the church, that we need to recommit to what Catholic education is all about. And that's how we can really provide students with the best education. And with all of these challenges facing higher education today, you know, the demographic cliff, rising costs, families being unable to afford it, all of these things, if you don't provide something distinctive and really shine in your mission, I'm not sure how you're going to attract students to come with, if you have a lukewarm mission or, mm-hmm. you know, aren't clear in what you're trying to provide the students.
Yeah. And I think this message from the Holy Father and this address to the leaders of these institutions, this is something for parents maybe to look up and to read as a reminder, because this is a time of year, and I know that those who are graduating from high school or just graduated already have their colleges picked, but if there are parents out there of students who are going into their, let's say, sophomore or junior years, and they haven't picked their colleges yet, I know they start picking them or looking at them sooner and sooner, this is something to think about, to make sure the colleges that they may already be considering, let's say they're interested in pre-med or they're interested in, I don't know, liberal arts, but they want to go into communications, they want to go into law, are they going to be helped and aided in terms of progressing in their faith, or are they going to be, you know, pushed aside in terms of just concentrate on those classes, get that degree from this big Catholic university, and you'll be fine? I think parents have to take a note and see what the Holy Father has said. Kelly Moore with you. We've got some other big stories to discuss. Kelly Solomon is with us from the Cardinal Newman Society for our Newman Guide News on a Tuesday. We'll be right back. From a beautiful message from our Holy Father to Catholic leaders in education that he gave recently before leaving for Spain, to a rather disturbing story. But it's important that we keep an eye on this so we know what's going on in Catholic education. So, Kelly, you want to take a look at what's been going on with some of these questionable commencement speeches, speakers, and addresses, right?
Yes, Teresa. You know, Cardinal Newman Society released a report showing that at least 19 Catholic colleges across the United States are hosting lavender graduations this spring, have hosted them, will be hosting them. These are ceremonies separate from the main commencement, intended to celebrate students who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, or otherwise under the LGBTQ umbrella. And as a Catholic institution, such ceremonies raise serious concerns. Lavender graduations affirm students an identity rooted in disordered sexual desires or confusion about the human person, rather than their deepest identity as sons and daughters of God. Unfortunately, these lavender graduations have become annual campus traditions at many Catholic colleges. And so the Cardinal Newman Society has released this alert and identified those 19 that we know of Catholic colleges that are hosting these lavender graduations.
And they're actually called, I mean, is this actually a thing? They're called lavender graduations, right?
Yes. At most of them, that's what they're called. Sometimes they could be an LGBTQ graduation, but the same idea, a separate celebration from the main commencement ceremony.
Okay, so why is that necessary when they're always talking about inclusion? Aren't they separating themselves then?
That's a great question, Teresa. You know, of course the church tells us to welcome all, to love all, to embrace all. But that doesn't mean leading students astray or not presenting them with the fullness of church's teaching on human sexuality, right? The church is very clear in its teaching that sexual attraction to persons of the same sex is not itself a sin, but such attractions are objectively disordered, and any resulting sexual activity is sinful. And, you know, in none of these event descriptions of the lavender graduation did we find any reference to church teaching on human sexuality in any way. Many of them are very generic. And so while none of them explicitly endorse student participation in sinful behavior, the language used clearly celebrates embrace of disordered attractions and lifestyles. And this sends a very dangerous message to students. You know, is this really the most loving and welcoming way to for these students? Or is this actually something that's leading them astray?
So there's 19 plus Catholic colleges across the country. You want to go through the list? It's really...
No, I think it is helpful for families to know what are these Catholic colleges.
Right.
Many of them, I think they will immediately recognize their name. Many of them are very prominent, well-known Catholic colleges. And in our article, CNS gives some advice of what to do. You know, please go reach out with public advocacy to these institutions. Let them know that you are that you're upset with these events. Many alumni have withheld donations when they hear about things like this, or choose to spend their tuition dollars in colleges at places like Newman Guy Colleges. So, Teresa, here's the list. Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., Gonzaga University in Washington State, University of San Francisco in California, Boston College in Massachusetts, Fordham University in New York, Marquette University in Wisconsin, Xavier University in Ohio, Seattle University in Washington State, St. Louis University in Missouri, Loyola Marymount University in California, Santa Clara University in California, St. John's University in New York, College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts, Albertus Magnus College in Connecticut, St. Mary's College of California, Mount Mercy University in Iowa, Our Lady of the Lake University in Texas, University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, and Siena Heights University in Michigan, which is closing down at the end of this school year.
So what actually happens at these Lavender graduations? I'm assuming they have their separate graduation event. They have a separate speaker. So the school has to spend extra money to set this up?
Right. Yes. I mean, these are publicly on the university's website as, you know, university-sanctioned events. And again, you know, why? You know, why are our Catholic colleges doing this? We need to clearly teach students the truth about the human person, sexuality, chastity, marriage, and holiness during their years in college. And how does that contrast with an event like a Lavender graduation?
Well, I also think getting back to this whole idea of those who live this lifestyle always want to talk about being accepted and included, they're excluding themselves by having these special graduations. And secondly, as you very correctly said, the church teaches that the attraction is not the sin, it's the acting on the attraction. And the church also teaches the fact that anyone, whatever their sexual orientation, sexuality and that this beautiful act of coming together as a man and a woman is meant for marriage. So those who are heterosexual have the same expectations from the church as do those who are, for example, same-sex attracted. And so the thing to me is, why are we separating ourselves? Yes, we love all people. We don't have to approve that lifestyle. But if you want to be included, why are you separating yourself and making this a special occasion?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and drawing attention
right.
to, yes, exactly, Teresa, I think.
So does that mean the heterosexual students have to have their own graduation ceremony then? I don't understand. Or the consecrated women or men
right.
who are consecrated virgins have to have their own graduation ceremony? I mean, if you follow that way of thinking, that's the way it should
that
be.
That logic, right. Yes, you follow the logic down that path and you wonder, how is this being inclusive of students? You know, that's what these events are supposed to supposedly designed for, is inclusivity, but how is it really being inclusive?
Lord, give me strength. Okay, so now we do have some positive stories that you want to share with some wonderful Cardinal Newman Society schools and their graduation ceremonies, right?
That's right. So, Teresa, you and I always talk about the Catholic college graduation speakers at Newman Guy Colleges, and it's a great contrast to what we see at many other Catholic colleges that, you know, host scandalous commencement speakers who have publicly defied Catholic moral teaching. But for the first time this year, Teresa, we looked at our Newman Guide high schools and how they're celebrating their graduations and what kind of speakers they're having at their high school graduations. And it's a really beautiful testament to the kind of formation education they've received over their years at this school. For example, to give a little context to it, one of our Newman Guide schools is the Lyceum in Ohio. And their headmaster told me how graduation is always a solemn and festive occasion. Having completed a rigorous liberal arts education with up to 6 years of Latin and Greek and the reading of great and good books, our seniors will enthusiastically celebrate with joyful minds and hearts. They have their final theology exam. Then they enjoy a fine banquet that's prepared by the junior class. They perform one last time on stage in a Shakespeare comedy, and the following morning, they sing one last time their final divine liturgy, and they sing Handel's Alleluia chorus as they end.
Oh my goodness!
So it's quite the celebration and the culmination of their years of education and formation. And their speaker is the president of Wyoming Catholic College in Lander, Wyoming. Several of the Newman Guide high schools invited Newman Guide college presidents, which is wonderful to see that they're trying to encourage students to continue down that path of faithful Catholic education and seeking out a real place that's going to be really invested in students and their Catholic formation for their college years as well. And so they invited the president of Wyoming Catholic College. Another one of our high schools invited Steve Minnis, president of Benedictine College, spoke for Colby Academy, which is actually an online program. So these are students who were homeschooled and used Colby Academy. And Steve Minnis, they gathered in person for their graduation, and Steve Minnis was their graduation speaker. So really wonderful. You know, the speakers are a wide variety. Many of them are one of the teachers from the high school. Sometimes they allow the students to vote on the teacher that's had the most impact on them as students. Sometimes it'll just be the principal of the high school or the pastor of their church. One of the schools told me really beautiful about why they chose their own pastor at True Cross Catholic School in Texas. They told me they chose Father Ricardo Arriola because through his leadership, our students are blessed with weekly adoration and confession, liturgical feast day celebrations and processions, and a deeper understanding of Catholic traditions and practices. His guidance and support of our mission to form students in faith and reason make him especially fitting to address our graduates as they prepare for their next chapter.
Hmm. I'm looking at this list of speakers. It's fantastic. And it's so great because you think about this step that they're taking, right? And you and I can think back, of course, if I go back many more years than you do, thinking back to my high school graduation, it was a student who spoke. But if you could get someone of this caliber who is solid and direct these kids, obviously these schools are, they're already well formed, but to continue along with that, to carry them on to college or wherever they're going to go, that's so important. That's why the graduation ceremonies in the previous segment, Kelly, we think about what's happening and we've talked about the difference in the speakers and whatnot and these so-called lavender graduation ceremonies. What are we leaving these young people with, right? And how are they starting off after that kind of formation in a college?
Exactly. What's your last word to the students? How are you going to send them off? And right. For many of them, their parents and grandparents are gathered, their friends and family. What's the one message you want to send to them or the one person you want to honor by putting in front of them? It says a lot about a school and who it thinks is excellent, what kind of person they want to honor, what they're really after with the education they're providing, right? So some schools might leave you with a final lavender graduation as your final note on campus. Others will leave you with great witnesses to the faith. I mean, many of these Newman Guide high schools, they invited leaders in Catholic education, which seems especially appropriate. I know our president, Patrick Riley, from the Cardinal Newman Society, was a speaker at one of the Newman Guide high schools.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that's great.
Right. The school was so excited to become Newman Guide recommended, had worked really hard to make that a priority and happen this year. And so they invited him in to essentially announce their inclusion in the Newman Guide.
And before we let you go, we have about 2 minutes left. And you have a big event, speaking of the wonderful Cardinal Newman Society. You have a summit coming up, don't you?
We do. We are gathering Newman Guide school and college leaders next week in Washington, D.C. for our Newman Guide Leader Summit at the Catholic University of America. So I'll be sad to miss you next Tuesday, Teresa, as I'll be on an airplane at that time flying up to our summit in D.C. Mm-hmm. And it's a great opportunity for these educators to get together, collaborate, strengthen Catholic identity, explore best practices, hear from some great speakers. So I'm looking forward to it.
And we're looking forward. You're going to give us a special and exclusive report when you come back, right, in 2 weeks?
I will. I would love to.
Well, it's exciting. Well, hopefully the weather won't be too warm in D.C. I know it can get really warm this type of year. So if folks want to find out more about the summit and the speakers and all the great work you do at Cardinal Newman Society, where do we go?
Go to cardinalnewmansociety.org. Up in our top slider at the top of our website is one of them is about our Newman Guide Leader Summit. You can see the full agenda, lineup of speakers. We're even having a banquet in the middle of the event to honor some longtime leaders in Catholic education. So it's going to be a wonderful celebration of the Newman Guide 20th year and America's 250th year as we gather in Washington, D.C.
How many people normally attend, Kelly?
So this is a small, close-knit environment where we just invite leaders of Newman Guide schools and Newman Guide colleges. Mm,
that's even better, though. You can be up close and personal with people, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right, my dear. Once again, great job with this segment on the Cardinal Newman Society, all about education with Kelly Solomon, Newman Guide News, and she'll return with us in 2 weeks. We'll be right back to let you know what's coming up tomorrow. Stay tuned. Thank you so much for tuning in to a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection, hour number two, speaking of Tuesday, here on EWTN Radio Extra. I enjoyed the show today. I hope you did as well. More great guests tomorrow, including we have a monthly pro-life update with a wonderful organization, Live Action. They do such amazing pro-life work. It was founded by the amazing Lila Rose. Every month, Kimberly Bird joins us. She's one of the top people at Live Action, and she gives us really an inside peek at the stories that are about to break, big stories on which they're working, and also the latest in pro-life activity. So Kimberly is with us for our monthly Live Action report, and then it's a Wednesday, so it's Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, based, of course, on my best-selling book published by EWTN, Italy's Shrines and Wonders. And by the way, speaking of books, the St. Francis book is out, and the pre-sales were doing very well, and they continue. Thanks be to God. I hope you do like it. You can find it at the EWTN Religious Catalog. It is Shrines and Wonders, Volume 2, Fascinating Places in the Life of St. Francis of Assisi. So you can check that out on our catalog. And last but not least, it will be Joan's Rome. Joan Lewis will join us with an update on the Holy Father's travels. And what a week it's been so far, and it's only Tuesday. Can you imagine that? The Holy Father arriving in Spain over the weekend. And what I love to see are all the different reports. I mean, it's all over TikTok. It's all over other areas of social media. So many people are tuning in to what the Holy Father is saying and doing. And I'm really praying, and I know you are too, that it's going to lead many people either back to or into the one holy Catholic and apostolic church. Talk to you tomorrow, or as we say in Italy, a domani. Ciao, ciao.